Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to everyone's favorite show about plastic surgery, health, and beauty. This is Nip Talk. Segments today, we got some good ones. First off, is your doctor an addict? There's a new study out that talks about the details of physician addiction. And then, a crazy plastic surgery death in Mexico. It's unbelievable. We're going to break that down. And finally, the best foods for great health. All those topics are coming up right now.
Live from Lincoln Center in the heart of the Dallas Metroplex, this is Nip Talk. An honest and uncensored show about plastic surgery, health, beauty, and lifestyle. With your host, plastic surgeon Dr. Bruce Herman, and your co-host, entrepreneur and social media influencer Sarah Bennett. Now it's time to discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly of the topics everyone is talking about. It's time for Nip Talk.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We really do appreciate it. Please hit that like and subscribe button. It helps me so much. I'm your host, plastic surgeon Dr. Bruce Herman, and with me, as always, is the wonderful Sarah. How
Hi.
Are you, Sarah?
I'm good. How are you?
Having a good day.
Yeah.
Travis is not in the box today. Unfortunately, he had a little car trouble this morning and was unable to make it in. We got Jordan in the box, who is going to be the man behind the scenes today. So it's just you and me, Sarah.
Cool beans.
And I have questions today, so it's really like all up to you to answer the questions. Normally, I get Travis to help us answer the questions, but he's unfortunately out today. But I think he'll be back next week. But all right, so I had a day today. So I did surgery this morning, and then I got done with surgery. I went out, went to get my truck, and it wouldn't start.
Yeah, so you were kind of in the same situation as Travis. So,
sort of, yeah. Yeah, I think Travis had like a fender bend or something. He's okay, but yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so I had to like bum a ride to my house to get my motorcycle. So I was motorcycling it up here today. That's why my hair is like kind of a fright. I think my face is all red.
Cause it was
like
a pretty day, so.
Yeah, it's actually gorgeous. And I love riding my bike. It's just, you know, not necessarily how I want to come to the studio in the middle of downtown.
No,
but it was fine. We made it no problem. And so big news for next week's the eclipse.
Yes.
So plans?
I don't really have any big ones. Hopefully I'll get to be with Avery, but I don't know.
And you said that Avery's not out of school?
No.
I think my daughter is out of school next Monday. I guess I need to double check.
Private schools can do whatever they want.
Yeah, they can. And they take days off for like the most random things ever, you know. But yeah, I think they're out of school, and I would love to take her. We did the eclipse in 2017. We drove all the way to Wyoming to see the total eclipse, and it was unbelievable. If you guys have never seen one and you live around here, I highly encourage you to go check it out, because like a partial eclipse, which happens, you know, a lot, is, you know, kind of cool or whatever,
right.
But like the total eclipse is like out of this world, man. It's like so bizarre to like see it go to like night in the middle of the day, like instantaneously. And then like the ring effect of the sun is just like so unbelievable. So yeah, if you can get her out of school, definitely do it and drive. There's like a map you can look at online.
Oh yeah, I've looked at it.
Yeah, it like, it goes right through the middle. Like this is gonna be then the total eclipse here.
Yeah.
But like where you live, it like goes through Dallas and then it heads east, so you're gonna have to go east from where you're at to see it.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be like in Prosper.
Yeah, but just remember that it gets kind of crazy on the roads around the eclipse times, and so if you're gonna go, you should just go early. Like I would literally get there, like plan to be there 2 hours ahead of time, because you'll probably get caught in traffic for people getting into that,
right,
that zone of totality.
Yeah,
but you should definitely do it. Like it's super super cool.
I'm thinking about it.
You should. And go get, you can go to like,
I have some. Sonic was giving them away for free.
Oh,
when
really?
You buy ice cream.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to get some. I had some for the eclipse in 2017, but I don't know what I did with them. So we'll have to pick up some more. I'm actually probably going to miss it. I have surgery that day and I'm supposed to finish at noon, but you know, I think it's 12:30 here. So it's going to be pushing it. And I'm not like where I operate. It's not like in the totality. So I'd have to like drive and it's probably going to be a chaos.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I got to figure out that out. I haven't actually thought about it. It's kind of snuck up on me. but definitely you should go if you can.
I definitely think I'm going to do something.
It'll be something that you remember forever. I remember when we went. It was like, it was pretty amazing. So.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, let's jump into some segments. So first off, this is a pretty interesting segment about physician addiction to different substance abuses. And we did one similar to this, I think like a year ago. I can't remember exactly how we phrased it. It was something about problem physicians, and I think maybe we delved into this a little bit.
Yeah.
But this is I want to do a whole segment on it because there's actually a new study out, and it has some interesting information in there, and so I thought we'd kind of go over it. So as people probably are aware, American does have a bit of a substance abuse addiction issue. Mm-hmm. At any one given time, there's about 47 million people per year diagnosed with substance use disorders.
Right.
And that could be, you know, alcohol, drugs, prescription drugs, illicit drugs, all that kind of things. So that's like 17% of the population at any given year that has currently using or has a substance, is defined as having a substance use disorder, which is more than just like once in a while use.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, if you drink like wine with dinner a couple nights a week, then obviously you're not going to be included in that. Right?
I mean, I would be then.
I know, it would be 100%.
Yeah.
It would be 100%. So that's a pretty high number. And of those 47 million, only about 6% get treatment. So,
okay. You
know, it's kind of an issue in the United States. It's just one of our things that we have because people have money and access to these things. It does become a bit of a problem. So there was a recent study by the American Addiction Centers, which is a group that looks into substance abuse, and they took a deep dive into specifically physicians and the kind of rates of addiction and actually some of the characteristics of different specialties, which I thought was wildly interesting. I learned actually quite a bit by reading this. So most of the research says that over the course of their careers, 10 to 15% of physicians will have a substance use disorder.
Okay.
Which, I mean, you know, and so I tried to like equalize those numbers because the first number about, you know, general Americans was a number per year. And so I kind of did the math and figured it out. So for a given, you know, career span, about 14% of Americans have a substance use disorder. Okay.
Yeah.
And for physicians, depending on which study you look at, it's 10 to 15, which means, you know, if you average that out to say 12.5 or whatever, you know, physicians are kind of on par with the general public as far as having substance use disorders, or maybe slightly less.
Okay.
So I don't know. What do you think about that? I mean, if you said, okay, would a physician be more the same or less likely to have a substance abuse disorder? What would you think?
I don't know. I mean, doctors, depending on what type of job I guess you have or specialty, it's very stressful, and
yeah.
Then they're around all of the drugs.
Right, exactly. I mean, you're hitting all the points I'm about to talk about. Well, I mean, I would have figured that it probably would have been about the same, roughly. You know, you might think that it would be less because, well, I mean, you hope doctors, because of all the rigors it takes to get into med school and residency and all that they might be a little bit less likely to get caught up in substance use disorders. And also to the risk, you know, if a physician gets caught, you know, using drugs, like they can lose their license.
Right.
And so, you know, that's a really big deterrent because you can't just easily go and, you know, do something else, right? Like if you have a job and you know, get caught doing drugs or whatever, you lose your job. I mean, you can get another job, but physicians, it's hard if you like lose your license. So on the one hand, you might think that it would be lower, but then on the other hand, it's the same. It's the exact things you literally just said.
Yeah.
It's a stressful job, and a lot of doctors have access to these drugs.
Yep.
And so that, you know, equates to some of these people getting caught up with substance use disorders. And I would also point out that, you know, I think that there's a lot of functional people out there that have some substance use disorder. I mean, these aren't people that are like in the gutter, you know.
Yeah.
Like hanging. Oh, but we didn't throw up my picture. Sorry, Jordan. Yeah, we throw up the picture. I made a picture.
The AI one.
The intro. Yeah, the intro one.
That guy, dude.
Sorry, Jordan. Normally, Travis throws these up when I kind of get rolling, and I forgot to tell you that. But anyway, yeah. Did you like that one?
That guy's head looks like a thumb.
Yeah, I think he's bald, but I don't know. Yeah, that's another great AI creation on my part.
Beautiful.
Anyway. So, yeah, I thought of that when I talked about the guy. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's probably with physicians a lot of very functional physicians that might have a substance use disorder.
Yeah,
where, like,
definitely.
When they're not working or on call, they're, you know, drinking or doing drugs or whatever. I thought that it was pretty interesting that this study looked into the different characteristics by specialty. And I actually, there was a couple things that I kind of, well, one for sure that I knew, two maybe. But then there's also some information that was totally new to me. So I'm going to ask, I was going to ask you and Travis, but Travis's not here. So I'm going to ask you these questions. So don't feel bad. A lot of these are very, like, they make sense, but you might not necessarily know them. So, all right, I'm going to throw up that first question, Jordan. All right, so which specialty has the highest rate of fentanyl and IV drug use? What do you think? Cardiologists, OBGYNs, anesthesiologists, family medicine. And so...
cardiology.
That's not a bad guess because they do sometimes use those drugs, but it's mostly about the access.
I would say if it's not A, then C.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So anesthesiologists have a much higher rate of IV drug use, including fentanyl. And the reason for that, well, there's two reasons. One is they have easy access. No one uses more fentanyl than anesthesiologists because they use it in surgery for anesthesia, right? So they have easy access to these drugs. I have no access to fentanyl as a surgeon, really. I mean, I never, you know, I mean, I guess I write orders. I don't even write orders for fentanyl. I write orders for morphine. But, like, I never touch the drugs. Like, I don't even know where they store the stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I don't really have easy access. But anesthesiologists, on the other hand, they always are using it. And so they do have an easy access to it. And also, there's a study out there that says that possibly the secondhand exposure to the anesthetic gases causes a reward trigger system in their brains that makes them more likely to use IV drugs. I'd never heard that before. When I was reading the study, it mentioned that.
Interesting.
It is kind of interesting, right? Because, you know, it's like a secondhand effect of the anesthetic gases, which are, you know, an anesthetic. So... yeah, but so about 40% of anesthesiologists who have to go to doctor rehab are there for IV drug use, which is a pretty high number compared to other specialties.
Yeah.
And that one does make sense. I mean, it's all about access. So, all right, next question. So what specialty has the highest rate of alcohol abuse? Surgeons, internal medicine docs, radiologists, pediatrics. I didn't know this one myself, Sarah. So don't feel bad. Like, I know I always put you on the spot, but, like, no one's going to necessarily know.
Surgery.
You are absolutely right. Surgeons far and away have the highest alcohol substance use disorders. And they also are very likely to use tobacco products, like cigarettes or whatever, which I didn't know that. Like, it's really – and get a little of these stats. So the risk of the average American having an alcohol – substance use disorder is 6.2%.
Okay.
So 6.2%. Remember that number. The average risk for a male surgeon is 14%.
Oh.
It's like over double. Female surgeons, 25.6%. According to this data, one in four female surgeons has an alcohol use disorder.
Like, yeah.
That's crazy. I did not know it was that high. Like, I may have to go down and break that data down. Like, I was reading, I was like, is this right? So very interesting. Surgeons very likely to use alcohol to excess, and especially female surgeons, almost by a double rate over males, which is double over the general population. Pretty wild stuff. All right, next one. All right, what specialty has the highest rate of benzodiazepines? So benzodiazepines are like Xanax, Valium, Ativan. This one kind of makes sense. I would not have known this, but then when I read the answer, or when I was reading this and it said that this specialty had it. So it's family medicine, psychiatry, emergency medicine, OBGYN.
Psychiatry.
You are 100% correct. Good job, Sarah. 2 for 3. That's really good. And the reason that makes sense to me is, the psychiatrist very often prescribes those drugs because they're seeing a lot of people with anxiety or other issues where benzodiazepines are helpful. And psychiatrists are more prone than other specialties to have stress, burnout, and risk of suicide.
Really?
Like, yeah, they think it might be because that specialty has to deal with so much mental health issues that it starts to affect their own mental health.
Yeah.
I mean,
I remember growing up that people always told me that dentists have a high rate of suicide.
I've heard that too.
My dentist, when I was a kid, killed himself.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, you know, and we've talked about this a couple times in some different segments, that physicians in general have a 2x suicide rate over the general population.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean, that's just kind of mind-boggling to me. I guess it's just, you know, a lot of stress-induced or, you know, subclinical
mental illness. Yeah, like, they're like,
or...
oh, it's... Well, I could see, like, I mean, my brain is like, oh, it's the weekend. I'm going to have a few drinks to like decompress.
I'm like, it's the weekend. I got to do surgery.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. I could see how doctors or
I could see
surgeons,
how people get burned out. I think probably if I had to like, you know, maybe
you could see you are a doctor.
Well, yeah, I mean, I work a ton, but I don't mind working, and, you know, I like what I do, so even though I'm working, like, I'm not, you know, unhappy. I do get a little bit burned out, but I think what happens is that people get burned out, and then that burned out feeling turns into depression, mm-hmm. and then once, you know, that's, like, the biggest
and then
one.
They try to treat it with whatever
yeah,
is
that's
around
one of
them.
Yeah, so, we talked about this just a few segments ago. Absolute biggest risks for suicide are, well, one, history of previous suicide attempt. That's, like, number one. But then substance use disorders, and mm-hmm. then history of depression or other mental illness.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so psychiatrists, they need to take care of themselves. They're at risk. Okay, let's go to the next one. I didn't know this one either. I don't know. When it came up, I was like, that makes sense. All right. So what specialty has the highest rate of going to rehab over any specialty and also the highest rate of illicit drug use? So like street drugs, like, you know, marijuana or cocaine or whatever. So family medicine, internal medicine, emergency medicine, OBGYN.
Emergency medicine.
You're so good. You're 100% correct. So, emergency medicine. I wasn't sure if I knew this. Like, when I read it, I was like, okay, maybe I knew that. So they do have the overall highest risk of substance use disorders, which reflects in the fact that emergency medicine makes up 3% of all physicians, but they make up between 8 and 18% of all physicians who have to go to rehab. Mm-hmm. So they have a very high rate of substance use disorders, and also a higher rate of using like illicit drugs. Yeah. You know, like surgeons, you know, are drinking, psychiatrists using Valium. And of course, that's all generalizations, you know, it's not 100%, obviously. They have a higher rate of illicit drug use, but it kind of makes sense. Emergency medicine is a specialty with a very high burnout rate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's stressful and, you know, it can be a thankless job, and I totally see how they can get burned out. And that oftentimes will lead on to substance abuse. So I guess we need to hug our ER docs. And
yeah, I'm sure, and they see a lot of things that
right. Yeah,
they don't want to see.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, that's true as well.
Yeah.
All right, I got one more question. So,
okay.
What specialty has the lowest risk of substance use disorders of the specialty? So we got pediatrics, radiology, GI medicine, OBGYN.
I don't know. That's hard. I mean, I have never seen GI medicine up there. dang. I'm just going to say pediatrics.
Good job. You know, you went 4 for 5. That's really impressive. Yeah, it's pediatrics. I don't know if I would have gotten 4 for 5. Some of those I definitely didn't know. Yeah, so pediatrics of all specialties has the lowest risk of substance use disorders, which is interesting. I mean, I don't think that is the least stressful specialty at all, honestly.
Maybe they get rewarded better when they help a child.
Yeah, maybe so.
I could see that.
I thought that was very interesting that of all the specialties, pediatric has the lowest risk of substance use disorders. And then the last thing I just wanted to kind of talk about this segment was, although physicians do have, you know, about equal risk of substance use disorders, they have a very, very high success rate if they go to rehab. So if a person has substance use disorder, they go to rehab, it's like about an 80% success rate, which is much higher than the general population. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just purely related to, you know, the financial repercussions of having a problem. And, mm-hmm. you know, if somebody, you know, has a substance use disorder and it starts to affect their job, I mean, it's a huge financial loss to them. And so I think that makes people are physicians very motivated to successfully complete like a rehab program.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. So I just want to recap this segment real quick. So today on Nip Talk, we did a segment about physician addiction and substance use disorders, because a new study came out by the American Addiction Centers that dived into all of the data on physician substance use disorders. And On average, a physician has about the same or a slightly less risk of having a substance use disorder versus the general population. Some people might think that it would be lower because of the high risk to their profession and also that physicians should just know better. But then again, physicians do have high stress jobs and they also have access to a lot of these substances that are being abused. I went on to have some very interesting data about the different specialties. It found that surgeons had the highest risk of having alcohol substance use disorders. And interestingly, female surgeons had a twice as high risk of having alcohol substance disorder versus male surgeons. It also talked about how anesthesiologists had the highest risk of IV drug abuse, such as fentanyl. Talk about how psychiatrists had the highest risk of benzodiazepine, things like Valium use disorders. It also talked about how emergency medicine overall had the highest risk of having abuse disorders and also the highest risk of illicit drug use. And then pediatrics, interestingly, had the lowest risk of substance abuse disorders. And also, just to end on a happy note, if physicians do have substance use disorders and they go into rehab, they have a very, very high rate of that being successful. So some pretty interesting data out about physician addiction. If you want to check out the full segment, just follow us back to the Nip Talk YouTube page and check it out. So,
very cool.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Physicians are people just like everyone else, and so they're not immune to the things that all people are subject to. So,
makes sense.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to a slightly more depressing segment than the first one. So there was a news article came out this last week about this absolutely crazy plastic surgery death down in Mexico, and all of these are pretty wild in my opinion, but this one was like kind of above and beyond.
Did they get a BBL?
So I don't think this one was a BBL. That's a very good good guess, Sarah, and you're usually right 90% of the time on that, but this one was not. So a 30-year-old lady from Los Angeles who went down to Matamoros, Mexico. Remember we talked about Matamoros because they were the ones that had that weird fungal outbreak in their plastic surgery clinics. And
it was like in their IVs, wasn't it?
I don't know if they ever figured out where it was. I can't remember, or I didn't necessarily see, but we talked about the Matamoros clinics.
Yeah.
They were having issues already. So this happened about a month ago. This lady's name was Tanquasha Williams. And as I said, she was from Los Angeles area. And she saw ads for this discount plastic surgery on Facebook. And that title segment up one more time, Jordan. It's there. You can see it there at the bottom. That's one of the ads. And I kind of got it covered with my crazy Mexico plastic surgery death. But these ads were popping up on Facebook. And I think they still are even right now. And so she saw these ads for plastic surgery advertised to be very, very cheap. So she called them up. She wanted to have a tummy tuck and a breast lift.
Okay.
And they said they would do that for $4,000, which if you're not up to speed on how much plastic surgery costs, that is dirt cheap. So the article that I read said that would normally cost $25,000. That's kind of crazy numbers. Maybe in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I actually asked my office, like, what would it cost if I was going to do a tummy tuck and a breast lift? They said it would be $15,000 to $16,000. So that came in way below the $25,000 that the article quoted, but way over $4,000.
Yeah.
So she was enticed by this really, really low surgery costs. And she went to this clinic in Matamoros, and I couldn't find the clinic name. I'm not even sure it necessarily had one. And saw a Dr. Orlando Villanueva. And this guy is on social media. He's not like big or anything, but he did have a social media account or two out there. They put a picture of them together on, I think it was his social media or hers. Yeah, that's the doctor in the middle. And the patient there on the right, I believe, is her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the day of her surgery. So,
oh goodness.
She goes into surgery to get a tummy tuck and a breast lift, and she dies during the operation. And they, I think they end up doing an autopsy. I don't know if they figured out what exactly happened at the time, but she died from rupture of multiple blood vessels in her chest and her abdomen. So I can break this down. I can break this down for you. Because if I told you that, you might know this because you've been on the show for so long. But the average person, if they said, well, how would somebody die from multiple ruptured blood vessels in the chest and abdomen from plastic surgery? Most people probably wouldn't know. But I could tell you with pretty good accuracy what happens. So it's very common that when I do tummy tucks, I'll do a little bit of liposuction to kind of even things out on the abdomen to make it nice and flat. And that's kind of like the very first thing I do. So it is possible with that liposuction cannula, when you're sucking out the fat, to get in the wrong place.
Yeah.
And remember Dr. Roxy, that girl that was like the TikTok doc or whatever, and she was like live streaming and she was lipoing and she punctured someone's intestine. Remember that? Well, you know, that person ended up going home and actually like 12 hours later got sick. This person literally died on the table, which means that this was massive trauma. I mean, almost like she had gotten shot or something. This guy took that liposuction cannula and like got into her chest and probably punctured some of the really big blood vessels around the heart, maybe the heart itself or the aorta, in addition to the abdominal wall muscle.
Why would you do liposuction in your chest?
Well, he just got in the wrong spot. Like, I mean, this is a catastrophically bad error. I mean, to the point that it's like, it's beyond malpractice and should be criminal. That Dr. Roxy, you know, got careless and she slid that cannula too deep and punctured an intestine. I mean, this guy was way worse than that. I mean, to the point that it's almost like just a murder.
Like, what are you doing?
like what are you doing? Yeah. I mean, you know, if a person does liposuction their whole career, they really should never have an incident where they get into the abdomen. I mean, that should never happen. It might, you know, it might just be bad luck or scar tissue or whatever, but it really shouldn't happen. I mean, it means that you're just way out of bounds. Mm-hmm. This is like not necessarily out of bounds. It's out of the ballpark. Like this is, you're in another state. I mean, that is just terrible. So yeah, she actually died on the table, which means that it's just massive trauma. And the story gets worse from there. If you can even believe it, the story gets worse. So the Mexican government came to the family and told them that neither the doctor or the clinic was licensed. Like they had no license to do surgery.
Ew.
Yeah. I mean, how crazy is that? I mean,
it looked like a family, somebody from her family was with her in that picture.
I think there was family with her. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Mexican government tells the family that neither this doctor, what's his name? Orlando Villanueva, or the clinic that he was at was licensed to do surgery.
So he was like a doctor, just like a...
I guess. I mean, and that's the thing that makes...
General
medicine. And that's what makes medical tourism so, so dangerous because, you know, here I am, a plastic surgeon myself, and I'm trying to look up this clinic, and I'm trying to look up this doctor, and I, with all the information and background that I have, I couldn't figure out who this guy was.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't figure it out. You know, I couldn't tell what kind of doctor he was or where he trained. Like, what if I can't do it, what chance does the average American have to figure this out if these clinics or these doctors are legit?
Yeah.
I mean, they have no chance. Like, no chance of knowing, is this person really properly trained and qualified to do this? Is the facility properly certified to do this? And it's just what makes medical tourism just so...
I wonder how many surgeries he's done and gotten away with it.
Who knows? Or, like, what kind of doctor was he? I mean... It's just insane. I mean, I talk about this literally all the time, and I guess I'm just going to have to talk about this my whole life, about do not do medical tourism. It is so dangerous. We are constantly talking about bad outcomes, death, like people getting, you know, butchered, like botched by these, you know, physicians in other countries. And it's not to like dog other countries, but they're just not the regulation that we have in the United States. I even talk about how it can be hard in the United States to figure out who exactly is properly trained, because you have, even the United States have, you know, general surgeons or OBGYNs doing cosmetic surgery in their office. And, you know, it's hard to tell in the United States who's who, but in another country, like, you just really have no chance of knowing, you know.
Yeah.
And you may get lucky and you may get cheap plastic surgery and it may turn all right, or you may die. And, you know, I mean, it could be anywhere in between.
Yeah.
And not to say that there's not risk of, you know, death in the United States, but we see, it's like, remember when we talked about the Dominican and it was something like 100,000 times more likely to die from, no, it wasn't 100,000, but it was an insane number. It was some insane number that, like, in the United States, your risk of death from plastic surgery is like 1 in 300,000.
Yeah.
In the Dominican, it was like 1 in 3,500. So I guess it's 1,000 times higher risk that you would die from surgery in the Dominica versus the United States. like those numbers are just like not, they're not even comparable. I mean, if it was like, you know, 1.5 times increased risk, okay, 1,000 times, like that's insane. It's like if you said, you know, you drive this car, you know, your risk of death is 1,000 times higher than if you drive this other one, like you would never get in that car.
Right.
Like there's no reason that you would ever do that. So, but yeah, this is just another good example of how medical tourism is just dangerous. And so it's hard to, you know,
super scary.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So I just want to do a quick recap on this segment that we did today on Nip Talk. We were talking about the crazy story of this poor lady, 30-year-old from Los Angeles, that went to Matamoros, Mexico to get plastic surgery. She was going to get a tummy tuck and she was going to get a breast lift at this insanely rock bottom prices. But unfortunately, during the operation, the big vessels in her chest and her abdomen were punctured, most likely from liposuction that was happening at the time. And she unfortunately died during surgery, which is very tragic. And then it gets worse from there because the Mexican government came back and said that the surgeon, Dr. Orlando Villanueva, and the clinic he was at was actually not licensed to do the surgery. So it just goes to show, once again, as we've talked so many times on the show, how dangerous it is to engage in medical tourism. It's almost impossible to find out if these people are properly trained, properly licensed. So please, please don't do medical tourism. It's just not worth the money you might save. You could end up with a very bad outcome or even with death. So
whenever I go to Mexico, I'm gonna see if there's any.
Are you gonna pop in?
Weird, like.
When you go, are you going to Mexico soon?
Like not hospitals. Yeah, in June, May.
Oh, nice.
May.
Vacation?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Tulum.
Oh, Tulum.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not a lot of plastic surgery places in Tulum.
Probably not.
Isn't that out in the sticks?
It's like south of Cancun.
Oh,
or something.
I think I've been there. That's the one that's right by Cancun.
But it's south.
Yeah, it's like an hour or something. Uh-huh. Yeah, we did that one year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's more of like a resort town, but there could
but
be.
But you're
like,
staying in Tulum or mm-hmm. in Cancun? Okay.
Tulum.
Yeah. Well, be careful in there.
Yeah.
I have to hear about this. That'll be awesome. How long are you there for? A week?
Just a weekend.
Nice.
Or I guess like a 4-day.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Good for you. You deserve it. All right, let's move on to our last segment. So this one's not quite as depressing as the first two segments, thankfully. So I don't know if I ever told you, I actually write articles for the Katie Taylor Weekly. Ever mm-hmm. tell you that?
I think you have.
Yeah, it's a paper that's here in Dallas. It's a local paper, but it's got pretty good circulation. And they were looking for somebody to write medical segments. And I was like, yeah, I'll do this. I've actually been doing it like for, I mean, almost a couple years now. So every once in a while, I'll write an article for them. And I'm like, you know what? That'd make a pretty good segment. So that's how this segment came about.
Okay.
And this one is about the best foods for good health.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, I think everybody has a little bit of an idea about what foods are good or bad. But I just want to dive into a little bit because, you know, we all want to be healthy, right? Everyone, I think, deep down wants to be healthy. But
yeah.
A lot of the things that you have to do to be healthy require a lot of time and effort, such as, you know, dieting.
Yep.
You know, working out. I know you work out like all the time and you're very, very dedicated, but not everybody is as dedicated as you are at doing that. And so it's nice to know that there are ways that you can improve your health with something as basic as what food you pay.
Yeah, I know.
So are you good?
I'm dedicated to working out, but I'm so bad about
picking out foods.
Yeah.
You know, I've been better about exercising. Like I kind of got back into running, although I've been working so much, I haven't like been hitting as much as I wanted to, but I do try to pick foods that are good. I try. I'm not the best at it, but I'm getting better. So, you know, and it's been shown through the research that, you know, picking the right foods can have significant impact on your health and prevent things like heart disease, cancer, type 2 diabetes, loss of bone density, loss of muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there is a lot of research to show that this does help. And research also shows that the American diet sucks. Like our diets comparatively to other, you know, prosperous nations is not good.
Yeah.
you know, we have a diet that has a lot of empty calories
mm-hmm.
and it's like really high in energy, but very nutrient poor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the soda, right? I mean, we talked about that, I don't know, a few segments ago, how I used to drink soda all the time. It's just literally empty calories.
Right.
You know, it's just pure sugar and energy, but nothing beneficial. So have you ever heard of nutrient-dense foods? Have you heard of that term?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay. I hadn't heard of that.
Oh.
Do you, I mean, are you familiar with which foods are nutrient-dense?
The complex carbohydrates are nutrient-dense, right? Or is that the opposite?
Well, there are certain... there are certain carbohydrates that are better than others, but when, at least from what I was researching, when people talk about nutrient-dense foods, they're talking about things that are low in saturated fats, low in sodium, low in added sugars, but rich in vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients.
Okay.
So it's basically...
So green things.
Pardon?
Green things.
That's one of them, but you'd be surprised that it's a lot more than that.
Okay.
So this all should be a good segment. I thought you would probably knew all that. I was probably thought, well, I'm going to do this segment. Sarah's going to know all
it. It might run my, jog my memory,
jogging
a
memory
little
bit. Okay. Well, you know, foods aren't necessarily labeled as being nutrient dense, but that is what you want to shoot for if you want to get the most healthy diet that you can. So let's talk about it. Well, obviously we're in Texas and everybody likes meat, right? So lean meats are obviously a good start, you know, poultry, pork, seafood, but there is one meat that stands out as being the best nutrient dense food. Any those shot in the dark?
I would say like chicken or like fish.
It is a fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. But specifically the one that people talk about the most is salmon.
Yeah.
So
I eat that.
You like salmon? I like salmon too. I like fish. I probably should eat more of it. I actually do really like fish. I like steak too much though, which is probably like the worst, you know, it's like literally the worst meat to eat, but it's like my favorite. Anyway, so salmon, very high in protein, very low in saturated fat, which is good, has vitamin B12, vitamin K, iron, vitamin D, and very importantly, it has, you've heard of omega-3 fatty acids? So those are very good for brain function, heart health, and your joints.
Yeah.
And it is very, very rich in omega-3 fatty acids. So if you want to like pick out the best nutrient-dense meat, salmon is one that you can't go wrong on.
Right.
Another one, and I heard this one before, and I think we did a segment on this, is almonds. Didn't we do a segment on almonds?
I've talked about...
Maybe you talked did a segment on almonds.
I've talked about like meals, like how to eat, like... to incorporate more protein into your diet.
Yeah, almonds are great.
Yeah.
High protein, high in vitamins, minerals, fiber. You know, we need fiber in our diet, antioxidants. And almonds do have fat, but it's monosaturated fats, which are actually good for your heart.
Yeah, the good fats.
It's the good fats, yeah. And you can eat them whole, or you can slice them up and put them in salads, entrees, desserts. So there's a lot of ways that you can eat almonds.
I can't eat almonds, so I usually eat like pistachios or something.
Oh, you can't eat almonds?
Are
you
allergic? I'm allergic to them.
You are?
Like really? If they're allergic? Raw, like just regular almonds, yeah.
Really?
It makes my mouth itchy.
Really?
And then my stomach will start hurting.
Yeah, you definitely don't want them then, because I mean those nut allergies can be like legit.
Yeah.
So be careful. But yeah, almonds are very good nutrient-dense food. So obviously most fruits are going to be, you know, good, but there's two that stand out. Apples.
Okay.
One of the reasons apple stands out is there's so many varieties that there's always an apple somebody will like. Meaning, you know, if you don't like tart, well, then there's sweet apples. If you don't like sweet, then there's tart. So there's a lot of different varieties, and they have a lot of fiber, which is good for your digestive system and also decreases the risk of heart disease. They have vitamin C and flavonoids, which I know we've talked about flavonoids. They are a substance that helps with protecting against cellular damage.
Okay.
So they're high in flavonoids. And the other fruit that's really good, oddly enough, is blueberries.
Really?
Which I love blueberries.
I guess blueberries, don't they have antioxidants?
Yeah. Man, yeah. Look how smart you are. So vitamin C, vitamin K, and it's anthocyanins is the specific thing that blueberries have, which are good for memory function, protecting your cells, preventing diabetes, and preventing obesity.
I like blueberries.
So. I do too. I love fruit. We always have a membership to the Fruit of the Month Club, which I know is like the nerdiest, like old person
That's
thing.
That's kind of cool.
I love it. We do like the...
Do they deliver it to your house or something?
Absolutely. It's like fruit and cheese of the month. And they'll pair the fruit and the cheese.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I love it. I mean,
That sounds nice.
Well, it's funny because...
Because I like both of those things.
I love fruit and cheese. And so my wife actually... like many years ago bought that for me for Christmas, and she was telling one of her friends, she's like, yeah, I bought Bruce this Fruit and Cheese of the Month Club. She's like, why would you do that? He's gonna hate that. And she was like, no, he's gonna love it. And of course she was right. I mean, I do love it. It's like, oh, what's the Fruit and Cheese of the Month?
I would like it too. That sounds
nice.
Cool.
All right, the next really healthy food is beans.
Yep.
Americans' diets are actually really low in beans compared to other countries, which is
English people eat a lot of beans.
Do they?
Yeah, they have beans with like their breakfast.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Well, they're probably healthier. Well, I know for a fact they're healthier. Americans are like the most unhealthy people in the world, I think.
Yeah.
Like, we're so bad. So beans are high in protein, high in fiber, low in fat, and high in nutrients such as phosphorus, iron, thiamine, magnesium, zinc, folate, and phosphate.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of like a very well-rounded food. I think the only kind of risk is I think, I'm going to eat beans. Let me eat refried beans, which, you know, like those are cooked in lard. So like it takes all like the positive and actually, you know, probably makes
it. Does it say like what the best beans to eat are?
It didn't.
Oh.
At least not the article that I was reading didn't specifically go. It said most, like all beans are pretty much good.
Nice.
But, you know, once again, how you prepare them, right? Because I mean, we live in Texas, so when I think of beans, I think of refried beans.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Have you ever had pinto beans?
Yeah,
like
of
pinto
course.
Beans at a Mexican restaurant?
Yes.
Because that's refried beans. It's just pinto beans is.
Yeah, but they're cooked different.
Yeah.
I think the refried, they're mixed with lard, right?
Yeah.
Like it's pure fat.
But they're made out of pintos.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, definitely cooked different though.
Yeah. Like more bad.
More bad. Okay. So whole grain foods have all parts of the grain and includes the wheat germ. So wheat germ is really good for you. It has many vitamins and also has a high level of antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
And so I honestly not sure I could have told you what foods have wheat germ in them. Are you familiar?
I've heard of it, but
yeah,
I try to always get whole grain everything.
Yeah, and that's good. So popcorn, which we eat a ton of popcorn in my house.
Yeah, I like
love popcorn. Brown rice.
Okay.
Not the white, the brown.
I eat that, yeah.
And then oats are the other big one.
Yeah.
And of course, things like whole grain breads and whatnot. And then of course, you talked about the obvious one, which actually was kind of far down on this list, are certain vegetables.
Yeah.
You know, all vegetables are pretty much good for you, especially the leafy vegetables. But three that stood out were... spinach, which I'm not a huge spinach fan. I like it in some soups, but I don't eat like a lot of spinach.
Sometimes
like, salads.
I throw it on top. I like cook it and I'll throw it on top of like my spaghetti, like meat sauce
or
something.
Really?
I'll just like throw it on top of it and like just eat it. And you can't even taste the spinach.
Yeah.
Because it's just,
I like spinach in like soups, like spinach and kale soups. Broccoli, which I just can't do broccoli. If I'm going to be unhealthy because I don't eat broccoli, then I'm just going to resign myself to being unhealthy. I just do not like broccoli.
But broccoli is in so much like Asian food.
I just pick it out. I'm really adept with the chopsticks. Like broccoli, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Just like toss them out. Yeah, I don't care for broccoli at all.
Little trees.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. And then finally, sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
Sweet potatoes are actually really good for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but there's a lot of foods on here that I really didn't realize how good they were for us. And actually, I'm going to, you know, I try to be good about what foods I buy. I'm going to like actually take my own advice.
Yeah.
I do it actually a lot of the grocery shopping in our house.
Yeah. You know what I did recently is I went on ChatGPT and
nice.
I said,
you know, I love ChatGPT.
I know. I said, pretend to be a licensed nutritionist or dietitian.
Okay.
I told it like how much I weigh, what my height is, like what my goals are. It gave, and I said, can you give me a meal plan, like a 3-day meal plan? And it mapped it out.
Did you do it?
Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, and stuff. I tried to do it, but I was doing like, I followed like a low carb diet, and yeah. I was just like, you know, one of those moments where you just like look at yourself in the mirror, you're like, I'm not gonna do this. I cannot be like, make a sandwich with a piece of lettuce, or make a sandwich with a piece of bread. I'm gonna make a sandwich with a piece of bread.
Right. Oh, and one, you make a sandwich with lettuce?
Yeah, like a roll, like a wrap.
Oh,
with like,
wrap. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that does not sound
Sarah,
as good.
You work out so much. You don't, that's the beauty of working out.
I
you
know.
You don't have to get crazy.
Like, but I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to ask it just to be like, you know, make like a normal diet. There was a lot of guano.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of sweet potatoes.
Okay.
Chicken.
Yeah, of course. No
steak. I don't know if there was salmon in it.
Steak and french fries?
No, none of that.
Oh, bummer.
But a lot of eggs, too.
Oh, I do like eggs. But yeah. I like fried eggs. Man, I always like the foods that are like cooked the wrong way. Refried beans, fried eggs, yum. Well, I hope you guys found that segment interesting. It does make a difference. The foods that you pick actually can make a really big impact on your health. So if you are interested in, you know, improving your diet, look to some of those foods that we talked about, and maybe it'll help you out. So, all right, I think, Sarah, that's all the time we have for this week.
For sure.
Yeah, so thank you guys so much for tuning in. We really do appreciate it. Please leave us a comment. We want to hear from you. Let us know what segment you'd like us to talk about on the next episode of Nick Talk. See you.
Bye.
Bye.